We're going to take your phone calls now this hour with Paul Hellyer, author of Light at the End of the Tunnel. The British Ministry of Defense has released more information on its UFO files, and they said back during World War II, then Prime Minister Winston Churchill was so concerned about a UFO case that he had it banned. He said, there's no way you're going to release this to the public. He was concerned about widespread panic, that citizens would stop going to church, and he just had the thing quashed. It was an amazing story. That's one of many that the British Ministry of Defense has released over the last day or two. Winston Churchill, the late prime minister there, had a UFO case put down because he was concerned the public would just be hysterical. Isn't that fascinating? Well, we'll be back with your phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, where do you get your energy? You don't stop.
I was blessed with it, I guess. But I live right. I eat well, and I swim regularly. So,
good for you. Have you always been health conscious?
Not as much as the last 10 or 20 years, I guess.
You know, I'm the same way. I wish I knew now what I should have known then. What a difference it would have made. How about you?
But isn't that true of all of us? And this is what I fear will be true of the world. You know, 20, 30 years from now, our grandchildren will turn back and say, well, where were you guys when something could still be done? But no, I'm celebrating a birthday tomorrow.
Well, happy birthday.
And my 87th birthday. So
That's fantastic. What my dad is, too. Same thing. Good for you.
And I'm still going strong.
Where were you born?
I was born in Waterford, Ontario, about 90 miles west of Toronto, where my father was a ginseng grower. He pioneered the ginseng business in Canada.
What got you into politics?
The economic issue. I was a child of the Depression, and I saw the misery and poverty and hardship that existed there. And at university, when I asked the professors, economics professors, if recessions and depressions were necessary, I was not satisfied with their answers, so I figured it out for myself and decided they were not necessary. There has never been a recession or depression that was necessary. Every single one has been due to some aspect of the banking system. And so I said, I just got to get elected and do something about this. So I ran in 1949 at the tender age of 25 and miraculously got elected. But then you learn the first lesson of politics. Just because you have your picture in the front page of the local newspaper doesn't mean you're somebody when you get to the Capitol. But fortunately, I say this with a great reservation, the Korean War came along, and the depression that had been forecast by the economists for 1950 didn't happen. And then after the Korean War, we had the 15 or so golden years. And in Canada, at least during that period, our central bank printed money and created it for the use of the federal government in substantial quantities. And it was we did that from 1935, actually from 1938 or 9 to 1974. And then the central banks of the world switched to Friedmanism, and it's been downhill ever since.
Okay, let's go to the phones now, Paul. We'll go to Jason and Tacoma, Washington. There you go, Jace. You're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Well, it's an honor to speak with you, Mr. Heller.
Oh, here.
Another thing, gentlemen, is on September 27th, Robert Hastings and Bob Salas, along with Colonel Halt, are going to do an event at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C.
Beautiful.
With over eight witnesses from the years at nuclear bases, and I guess he'll be on with George Knapp on the 15th. But my question for Mr. Hellyer is, it seems that the problem that we're facing, one of the major problems we're facing, is the media, the mainstream media. I saw Nick Pope on TV today about the MOD files, and it was just like a 15-second, seemed really short. So the question is you're the former defense minister of Canada. Why can't you get on Larry King or some of these other shows? are we going to do to break through this the problem with the media? That's our roadblock.
Well, I wish I knew the answer to that question. As far as those major shows are concerned, I'm going to try and get on some of them. How much success I will have, I don't know until I try. I've just started promoting the book, which is hot off the press. But I do think that things are beginning to change, and I've had more reason for optimism in the last, I guess, 12 months or so than I've had previously. But the mainline press, and incidentally, in my book, and where I have a political agenda in the last chapter, I say that the mainline press have to come clean and tell the truth about three issues that they really don't talk about. And one is the ET presence and technology. The second one is the monetary system and how it works. And the third is the negative aspects of globalization. And these are the three areas that they sort of sweep under the rug and treat without the deference that they deserve. And I think we're going to have to push them in that direction for all three issues. And I will do my little bit in the next 3 or 4 months to the best of my ability.
You really think they would, Paul? You know, I don't think they're that economically savvy. Well, and, you know, and unless a UFO lands on the White House lawn, and it's not going to happen, they're not going to cover that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there comes a point when they can't deny it. 50 years ago, there was a lot more newspaper coverage. You know that.
Yes.
My files are full of stories and pictures of sightings and happenings 50 years ago.
And there were good reporters who chased these stories down.
Right, but I think there was something happened to the press that had visits from little men in black suits and were told to avoid the subject. I suspect that something like that happened.
All right, let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Steve, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Stephen. Welcome to the show. Steve, you there? Nope, I guess he's not. We'll try Joe in Bronx, New York on the wild card line. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, yes. First of all, happy birthday in advance, Mr. Hellyer.
Well, thank you very much.
I wanted to ask, now, concerning medical advances, do you know of, or have you heard of any medical advances that can be attributed to or derived from ET?
I would be careful to say that I know of any, but I was listening to a tape the other day that Paula Harris brought with her when she came up to interview me, and from Colonel Corso, and he was talking to somebody about a knife that the ETs had that they can use for an incision. They can cut someone open with a knife, and then after the operation has been completed, they can use the same knife to heal, to close the wound.
Seals you right back up, huh?
Yeah, just close it right back up. And coming back to the cattle mutilations, George, that we were just sort of sloughed over before, there is the possibility, and I just say possibility, I use that word, I think, correctly, dictionary-wise, that some of the cattle mutilations could be of domestic origin using medical instruments that were available from the extraterrestrials that are so neat and which cause so much curiosity and so on.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Tyler, first-time caller in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Tyler.
Good morning. How are you, gentlemen?
Good, sir.
Yes, my question for tonight was, I've been listening to the show on and off since February, and I've heard a couple of times about, like, Babylonian bankers or, like, a Babylonian tribe that has influenced civilization pretty much since the beginning, and I was wondering if the guest this evening has come across any information suggesting that, like, the ETs are connected to this Babylonian influence at all?
No, I haven't. I really don't know. And there's some fascinating things about antiquity. I am convinced that there's a very strong probability, and I personally believe it's true, that ETs have been visiting the planet for millennia, and that this is not a new phenomenon. How much they were involved in various things like the building of the pyramids or anything like that, I really don't know, but I find it as fascinating as a lot of other people.
And Tyler, also let me tell you about Zachariah Sitchin, whom you're aware of, Paul, of course.
Yeah, right.
In his work, Tyler, he is convinced that the Sumerians that came from that region were involved with ETs, and that they have, according to his interpretation of their text and tablets, that there was visitation back a long, long time ago. You can go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, and type in S-I-T-C-H-I-N, Sitchin, and you'll get some information on that. Have you ever met him, Paul? I have once.
No, I haven't. I've read his stuff, and I find it fascinating.
Yeah, really. Great theories. But we had him scheduled, but he was in the hospital. So, and I guess he's doing a little better, so hopefully we'll get him back on. Let's go to Dean, your neck of the woods, Edmonton, Alberta. There you go. Go ahead, Dean.
Hi there, Paul and George. Just really awesome to talk to you both. I just wanted to say, Paul, that I am so proud that as a Canadian citizen, obviously, that a Canadian of your caliber is willing to reveal these important facts to the U.S. and to the world, for that matter. And I thought it was really interesting because I just watched a video the other day of William Cooper in 1989 at a UFO symposium talking about the secret government in MJ-12. And you've pretty much confirmed everything he said in that speech so far. So I just thought that was really interesting.
Well, thank you very much. Colonel Halt's name was mentioned recently, and I have a long section from an interview with him. It's a verbatim interview from him going to, well, I'm going to put an end to this nonsense once and for all, until he became himself a person who saw with his own eyes, and it changed his life forever. And he had some kind things to say about my book, and that he had heard a lot of the things that I mentioned in my chapter on this subject, but he paid me the compliment that mine was put together in such a way and documented better than some of the other things that he had seen or read.
Very good. Next up, we go to Atlanta, Georgia. Kelly's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Kelly.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. My question is, do you foresee in the near future any kind of mass uprising or revolution in the United States? And if so, what would be some possible short-term triggers of that?
Well, I can't say. I'm not a specialist in U.S. Politics, but I know that the United States is deeply divided, and I think I read something yesterday about the admission that there are now two economies. There's an economy for the rich and an economy for the poor. And I hope that you're not talking about the, you know, the revolution in the sense of taking up arms, but I'm hoping that there will be a revolution of interest, people taking more interest in the political system and insisting on not just promises but results, and that in the near future that the people of the United States will demand that the leverage of the banks be reduced, say from 20 to 1 to maybe 3 to 1, and demand that the United States government start using its sovereignty and creating enough money to put people back to work and to give the states money that they need in order to restore services that they have cut and to provide employment, and demand that they start the transformation from fossil fuels to exotic fuels immediately and with utmost haste, which means also that they demand that there's full disclosure of what the of the people in the underground facilities know about the alien technology and how much it can help humankind, and especially and this would provide a great stimulus, of course, too, if this was undertaken. It doesn't have to disrupt the economy, and especially if the governments take back some sovereignty and print some money that is not debt, it can be a great stimulus if you have to replace a tremendously important industry with something very different over a very short period of time. This can provide opportunities and employment for thousands, tens of thousands of people, and good jobs, and the kind of things that have disappeared. The main thing that the U.S. has been exporting for the last 30 years is jobs, and it's time that they created some good new ones for the people who have been displaced during this period.
Absolutely, Paul. That would be a good thing. Do you have any plans to go back into politics?
Me?
At the ripe young age of 87?
No, I think there would be people in my family who would say, do we have some way we can chain them?
Yeah, really. What do you think of Ron Paul here in the United States?
Well, I think he's brave to smoke out from Ben Bernanke how money is created.
Yeah.
And that the $1.2 trillion or whatever it was just created out of thin air. I'm not sure about I'm with him totally that it would be a good idea to get rid of the Fed and replace it with something. I think maybe we may have some differences on what we would replace it with. I have a few things to say about that in the book. Incidentally, in this book, Light at the End of the Tunnel, I just have one chapter on the money thing. And from some of my readers who've gone through it already, I think tested their tolerance to the maximum extent. But for anyone who studied economics and who really wants to know what is behind the radical proposition that I have in Light at the End of the Tunnel, this other book, A Miracle in Waiting, is one that would give you answers and which would, I think, present some points of view that you didn't get at university if you were studying economics. And you'll probably find them interesting and a bit thought-provoking, I think.
All right, let's go to Steve in Windsor, California. There you go. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, George. And may I say it's always an honor to participate, especially on a show that covers such a serious topic as this. Good evening, Mr. Hilliard.
Good evening.
Honor also to speak with you. A quick comment and then a couple of questions to follow. I am... been listening to this show for a long time since I work at night, and I tend to want to subscribe to the suspicions of those out there, other authors and who deal with the phenomenon, such as Dr. David Jacobs, who are starting to put the pieces together and are suggesting that there just might be a mechanism to this ET phenomenon whereby they are collectively working with certain human beings to create a resistance to maybe others that are going to come later, such as from a heavenly realm, to try to protect the powers that be in this current world system from, say, the collapse of and or the, you know, as the, our biblical paradigms would suggest, a new system to come. Given your in-depth understanding of this situation, do you tend to feel or believe that this particular phenomenon is following our biblical paradigms, such as the Revelation prophecies? Or do you think that our biblical paradigms are essentially outdated and don't follow this at all?
Let's get that question, Paul, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. I've got to tell you, Paul Hellyer, he's chocked full of a lot of information. His work, Light at the End of the Tunnel. And we'll come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls. Don't go away. Paul, when you first began to believe in the ET presence, did it surprise you? Did it shock you? How did it affect you?
I guess it just confirmed how little I knew. One of my lines in the book is, I didn't know how much I didn't know because I didn't know how much there was to know. And that is, I think, true of all of us, that no matter how much we read and listen and learn, what we do is find out almost daily that there's still more to learn and more to find out about. And so it was just walking down a path that I hadn't planned to walk down, but it's been very fascinating. And the further I go, the more fascinating it gets. I think if I had been faced in the first few days or weeks of my serious study of the subject with all of the information that I have now, I would have been shocked, or I would have been full of disbelief, I think. So it's been a gradual process, and that's the reason that in my book I just put in things that are, you know, relatively straightforward. without going too much into ethereal things, but I've really it's been a revelation to me, and of course there are other revelations, and I just appreciate very much the fact that Pierre Juno pushed me in this direction a few years ago.
Well, let's go back to Steve in Windsor, California. Steve, I'll let you wrap up again with your question.
Yes, thank you very much. And I'll try to summarize and be much more brief. So I am just wondering if the overall ET phenomenon seems to be following a pattern that would fit as more and more professionals and get involved with this phenomenon would fit the paradigm of our religious paradigms, of a revelations prophecy or the incorporation of ETs as angels and the ETs working with humans that are in power on the planet now to, say, create an army or a future army to fight against, say, another group of ETs or a heavenly realm of ETs who are going to come down and, as prophecy would say, you know, turn the tides on this existing world power and set up a new world order, one more, you know, in line with God's will. Do you feel that that's something that's happening now, or are spiritual paradigms just outdated and really don't apply anywhere with this ET phenomenon as you understand it?
Well, I have read the Bible from cover to cover three times, though I don't claim to be a scholar. And I think my conclusion is that I take it very seriously, but I don't take it literally in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm skeptical about these things, quite skeptical, and I keep thinking about the end times. They have been forecast, you know, for 2,000 years. And I read about people who have taken them so seriously that they have sold all of their belongings and gone up to the top of the hill and waited for somebody to come and get them. And my approach is, because I don't know what the future holds, I have to assume that it's going to be very much like the past, that we're going to keep on going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that what we really should do is try to evolve spiritually more quickly than we have in the past. And in this sense, learn both some of the lessons from the Bible and the lessons perhaps from some of the from the ETs. One of my chapters is based on a tour of the Middle East, a discovery a tour of the Middle East, and I visited Medigo where the legendary final battle of Armageddon is supposed to be fought, and my impression was, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I don't say it's impossible, but I think the odds are 100,000 to 1 that it will not be there. And I'm more concerned, frankly, with getting on with what I call building the kingdom of God on earth, with the help of whoever will help, and the enlightenment of people who take spiritual things seriously. And one of the conclusions that I come to in the book on in the short religious section is that the golden rule is fundamental in one of its interpretations to all of the major religions, and that if we all practiced it, if we all had the capability of practicing it, which of course is very difficult because it challenges our human nature, then we could revolutionize the world, and it would be a different world than it is today. So how that fits in with the ETs, I really don't know, except I think we have to learn from them, not just the technology that we can use to kill each other more effectively, or maybe to fly off to other star systems, but to build the kind of a world that God would want us to have, one that where we're good stewards not only of the planet, but where we care for his widows and orphans and give them the kind of treatment that the Bible seems to say is so important all the way through, right from the beginning.
Paul, what is it about these power elitists where they have everything they want, but they continue to want more, more money, more power, more control? What is it? Is it a game for them?
It's both. It's greed, one of the seven deadly sins, as so described. But it's monopoly game too. Just they want to run everything. And I have a chapter in the book, as you know, called "Mammon Rules the World," And those of you who study the Bible know that Jesus said that you can't serve God and mammon. And at the moment, we're serving mammon. And so part of the transition that has to occur to achieve the kinds of things that we want, the kinds of world we want, is to stop worshiping mammon. And that, of course, affects the banking system and letting a power elite make our decisions for us instead of letting some of them be made by ourselves and all of this sort of thing. So there is a very definite connection here between the evolution towards spirituality, which I hope will speed up very quickly in the months and years ahead, and it I'm sure has some connection of some sort to what the kinds of signals we'll get from people from other planets, but just exactly what they are, I really can't say.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Eau Claire, Wisconsin, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Tim.
Good morning, fellas. How are you doing?
Good.
It is truly an honor to speak to both of you. I guess my question tonight is, what is the wisdom of, for all practical purposes, paring down our military-industrial complex if by some chance a hostile race decides to come to Earth and you know, take us over? I mean, wouldn't we want a strong defense in case that happens?
I think it's your hypothesis that has to be questioned, and we don't know who that would be that was going to come down and take us over, who didn't do it 20 years ago when they could have.
Well, maybe they haven't found us yet.
Haven't found us yet.
Right. Maybe that race that could possibly do us in, you know, hasn't discovered that little blue ball, you know, floating in space that looks like it'd be an interesting place to, you know, make into a resort or something, you know, in their mind.
Well, maybe some of them have already made it into a resort and haven't caused us any problem.
I don't know. It just seems to me that it would be a very good idea to have a strong defense as a just-in-case, you know, type of fallback.
The problem with carrying arms is the temptation to use them. And I personally think that the world is much worse off because we spend such a large proportion of our income on military might. And it's self-defeating, because when the United States stepped up their military expenditures, then the Russians said, well, we're going to have to do the same. And the Chinese said, we're going to have to do the same. And when they start talking about building an anti-ballistic missile system, then the Russians say, we've got to retaliate in some way. And it's never ending. And what we really want is an unwinding in the opposite direction, to get rid of these weapons of mass destruction that could obliterate the planet, and to change our priorities and to have enough financial resources to replace our aging infrastructure, that worn out water pipes and bridges and all of the things that have to be replaced that are past their best use dates. And you can't do both. You can't put both at top priority. You have to make one the priority or the other. And I just say we've been following the wrong priorities, and it would be good if we really, if we spent more time on the quality of life and less on fighting each other and provoking other people to change their priorities to meet ours.
Let's go to Jim, truck driving in Maine. You're up. Hey, Jim.
Hey, George. Good shit about, brother. How you been?
There you go.
Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, I'm a firm believer in the Bible. Now, I know that this gentleman's a little skeptical of it, and the Bible says that in the last days there'll be scoffers saying, when is this appearing? When's he coming back? Now, I just wondered, sir, do you believe that the ETs could be God and his angels coming back, or what do you think about that?
I think some of them could be. I don't know, but I know that some of them have qualities that would put them in that sort of general category.
There is a camp out there, Paul, as you know, that believes that they are either demonic forces or very spiritual forces. Who knows? Again, I tend to think that they're from other planetary systems, but it is a pretty provocative theory, isn't it?
Well, there's no doubt that they're from other planetary systems. They come from a number of places, as you probably well know. And I think that that most of them want to do good by us, to be good to friends and neighbors and to help us. And some of them may indeed be angels or bearers of, or guardian angels or whatever. I really don't know. I personally believe in the guardian angel. And I should say, I don't want to give the impression that I don't believe in the Bible. It's just that I don't take a lot of the prophecies literally in the same way that some interpreters do, because I think maybe they're constructing things about them that may or may not be relevant. I think there are some principles there, and it's certainly a great read, best read I've ever had.
Let's go to David in Ontario. Lots of Ontario callers today, Paul. I wonder why.
Because you're on. I didn't there think anybody go, in Ontario stayed up this late.
Oh, they do in droves. Go ahead, David.
Yes, I'm surprised that I got on. I've been waiting 50 minutes here, just hanging on, listening to you guys. But with respect to Paul Hellyer, it's a great honor to speak to you. Which administration were you defense minister under?
Pearson.
Under Pearson, mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just wondering, going back to your first premise, there's so many questions I'd like to ask you, but we'll go back to your first premise about global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not consider that global warming is a natural phenomenon that is occurring? There are no predictions and revelations I can think of that are saying that the world's going to heat up and the ice caps are going to melt, et cetera, et cetera.
No, but the fact is it is. And in my book, I admit that some of the global warming may be from sunspots and so on, because it is true that Jupiter, for example, or Mars, I guess it is heating up a little bit. But we can't do anything about that. What we can do is what we are responsible for. And we are responsible for the same, for the majority of global warming. And I don't know if you saw the front page of the Globe and Mail 3 or 4 days ago, but they had the graphs of about 10 different criteria that the air temperature worldwide, the water temperature worldwide, the ice caps declining worldwide, every single criteria that was measured by 300 scientists was released in the report from the United States, I forget the exact public agency, last week, and every single one of them showed disaster in their trends for 30 years. In other words, if it just keeps on going, we're in deep, deep trouble. And I would say that it was absolutely convincing. And there was, if you didn't see it, it was last week sometime, I'd try and get a copy of it. Front page, about 10 graphs, every single one of them showing the trend worldwide for the last 30 years. And it was, I would say, irrefutable. And then it was, of course, to offset some of the propaganda that we've been getting from the oil companies, who have been meticulously doing to us the same kind of thing that the tobacco companies did for so many years. They had evidence that showed that nicotine was carcinogenic, but they hid it, and they kept saying that the science wasn't complete, that it wasn't absolutely totally reliable. In the meantime, a lot of people got lung cancer and so on, and it took a lot of work to smoke the truth out of them. And the same thing is happening now with the oil lobby, trying to just cause enough confusion in people's minds that they say, well, maybe it isn't as serious as it sounds, and we don't need to really face any alarm. But if you look at that data, why, you'd say to yourself, hey, this is real, and it is really urgent, and let's get on with it and stop monkeying around.
Let's go to Anchorage, Alaska. Joe, you got a few minutes here. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Joe in Anchorage at 6650 KENI. And I'd like to talk about the global warming and also about renewable energy. The global warming is, how come in Anchorage for the last 3 months we've been cloudy and rainy, and my barometer says fair, but the humidity is way up there. Is someone trying to keep the cool weather from going down to the lower 48? And my second thing is about renewable energy is we could put many people to work with things like taking your fruits and your vegetables, putting them in like garbage cans, and having it picked up on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and like the dumpsters do, taking it and having it crushed and have energy fuel coming from that.
Well, you're right, Joe. We could do a far better job with renewable energy like that. There was a plant in Carthage, Missouri years ago, and I don't think they're in business anymore, but they used to take, Paul, scraps of turkeys, and they would make fuel from turkey carcasses and stuff like that. But that's not happening anymore. In terms of the weather, I don't know what's going on. I know in St. Louis, the humidity has been outrageous in the week I've been here. It's probably that way all over the place right now. Paul, we're running out of time. I want to thank you for being on the show. Light at the end of the tunnel. Again, it's available where, Mr. Hellyer?
It's available from Amazon, probably Barnes & Noble's. I think any bookstore could order it for you from Author House of U.S., who do the publishing and printing.
Thank you, Paul. Always a pleasure talking with you. You take care. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.